Welcome to Sales Talk for CEOs. I'm glad you're here. I'll be interviewing CEOs who have successfully scaled their B2B sales organization. In each episode, I'll start by uncovering the sales background of each CEO, dig into the strategies they use to build their sales organization, and wrap it up with what the future holds. We'll cover the good, the bad, and the ugly of scaling a sales organization. I'm your host, Alice Hyman. How do you go from needing zero to 100 in-house consultants in a very short period of time? Well, obviously, you have to increase your sales. And today, I have Dmitry Lechik from Twistler here to talk about exactly how he did it in just about 5 years. Welcome, Dmitry.
Thank you very much. Let me say hello to the audience. I hope my story will be more or less of interest. I will try my best. So thank you, Alice, for inviting me. And yeah, let's go.
Well, we're delighted to have you all the way from Poland. This is the great miracle of the internet, right? We always get to talk to people halfway around the world or all the way around the world.
That's true. Yeah, it's amazing how you can build a company and work internationally, being located yourself somewhere in Europe and work with customers over the world, like in US, Australia, Asia. That's what we are doing. Yeah.
Yeah. It's awesome. So you are the number one Salesforce consulting partner in Denmark. And as you just mentioned, you work with customers all over the world. But okay, tell us exactly what does Twistler do? And how did you start to work all over the world?
Oh, yeah. You know, we are trying to help companies to build the maximum, to get the maximum out of their Salesforce investments. So we are a Salesforce consulting company, and we literally help to configure and customize Salesforce to do the best for a specific business somewhere in the world, in the faraway country.
Yeah, you know, one of the things that I've learned about Salesforce over the many plus years that I've been in this business is that people buy Salesforce and somehow think it's going to be just like plug and play. You just turn it on and then the salespeople can use it. But that's just not the way it works. And when they are budgeting for it, if, you know, they're starting up or if they're just deciding after 15, 20 years to add Salesforce to their tool stack, I always remind them that it's not just the per seat price of Salesforce. You have to budget in for consulting. So before we go back to the beginning and hear your story about how you started the company, just tell us a little bit about this Salesforce consulting and what exactly needs to be done.
Alice, you would be a great customer, I would say, because this thought that Salesforce is panacea that you can just bring in and it will do everything for you itself, it's a great prejudice that has to be avoided. Indeed, it's a tool. It's a great platform. It's a scalable tool and it can do a lot, but it has to be tailored to your business. Actually, I'm always saying that all IT projects and investments are not about technology. They are about people. You need to clearly understand how people interact, how people communicate, how actually your salespeople work every day to get their customers happy. And only when you understand all that and what needs to change in order to get some different business outcome, only then you can step to the question, how should our system support that with automations?
Yes. Oh my gosh, I'm so glad you said that. Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I see people buying a tool and force fitting their process into the tool versus figuring out the process and the way the people do the process and then bringing the tool in.
Absolutely, yeah. This is very easy to just ask your marketing specialist or some employee of your company to just go out there and take a look what solutions to our business challenges exist. And the result of that is typically you get a few systems with some feature lists, and then you start to just compare directly. This system has this feature, this system doesn't have this feature. And you think, oh, great, it has this feature. It will help me. It will bring my business to a new level. But only then you make a decision based on these feature lists and price, And then you start to understand, oh, there are nuances. You need to understand how exactly this feature works, how exactly it is compatible with the processes that you already have, probably automated. And then you are just stuck, because without proper business analysis stage, when you really get to know the company that you're working with, what are its specialties, you can take two very, very similar businesses from one area, from one industry, and on the top level, they will have the same processes, the same needs, the same challenges, but you need to just dive a bit deeper, and you will see that they are completely different in terminology, in how processes are structured, in how decisions are made, what metrics are tracked, so on and so forth. And this is what a professional consultant really does, not focusing on the features and the solution itself, but on the business and the processes of a customer who is interested to invest. And sometimes our role is to convince, please don't spend your money right now. Your business is not ready yet. You need to first solve this and that organizational question and matter. And only after that, you can look at the systems that exist. So that's what
100%. I mean, it makes my heart warm to hear you say that. Sometimes you're just not ready yet. So do these things first to get yourself ready, because I've seen, you know, Salesforce and other CRMs 10 years later, what a mess.
Oh yeah.
And people can't pull the data out that they need. They have to export everything to spreadsheets and reorganize it. I'm like, no, that is what Salesforce or your CRM does. You should not have to export everything into spreadsheets. So this is just so fascinating to me, because it's such an important role that you play in the world of sales. But let's rewind and go all the way back to when you started this company, when there were zero consultants, and when you didn't sell all over the world. And tell us what you were doing. I know that you have two co-founders. And so I imagine the three of you were just sitting around one day and decided to start a company, right?
Almost like that. I have a long story. Before founding Twistellar, I was for 15 years co-owning and managing a group of companies involved in wholesale and retail sales and manufacturing. And we were working in Eastern Europe. And I spent a lot of efforts to automate the business myself. And I actually was sitting on the opposite side of the table, right? Mm-hmm. I was speaking with IT integrators who were trying to help me automate my business and get some different results. And I was acting as this business stakeholder who doesn't want to know in details how it works, but would like to get the right solution, right? And so I acquired a lot of experience how automations can be done in the right way or in the wrong way, and went through many mistakes on that path. But afterwards, after those 15 years, I thought that, all right, great, I am active in Eastern Europe, how I can go global? I just wanted to grow as a professional and try to apply the skill set to a more global market. And I intentionally started to look for an industry or a market niche where I would be able to apply this skill set. And I met Salesforce by pure coincidence. Like, one, my acquaintance said to me that, look, there is Salesforce. It seems to be interesting. Maybe you would be interested to do something there. I took a look at Salesforce and I found this domain to be very attractive because, first of all, it's very well structured. You can really understand who is doing which kind of services, what people are available, what certificates do they have. And to me, such a structure was a sign that I could come up with some specific positioning on this market. Because I believe that in sales, the very first step that needs to be done is the proper positioning. How you are different from our other companies? What different can you bring to the table? And without that...
Pause there for a second. Did you do any selling? You mentioned you were, you know, working with these other companies. Did you personally do any selling when you were younger working?
When I was managing my own business for 15 years in the real sector economy, I didn't do any sale myself, but I was managing the sales system, inventing some kind of motivation schemes of salespeople, doing some product management, pricing management, these kind of things. But I was never one-on-one with a customer, with a challenging customer over the table. So nothing like that. It was a completely new experience to me and a huge challenge because I'm actually quite an introvert myself. So you can imagine how hard it was for me to really cross over myself and start speaking with people who are not that much interested in speaking to me, actually, in the beginning.
Right, right.
Yeah,
so you had this idea and you researched Salesforce and you thought this is a great structure and you felt like you could really make an impact there. You felt like you could position yourself in the market, which you said was very important. And I completely agree. How did you find your partners, your co-founders?
Occasionally, again, my strong belief is that you can be successful when you are combining several, when several factors are combined. First of all, you have to be lucky. If you don't have enough luck, you will most probably not able to achieve anything. Second thing, you have to be very active. You have to be very energetic. You need to really try and catch every opportunity that is around you. And there are plenty of opportunities. You just need to understand how to notice them. And third thing, you have to be extremely hardworking and diligent. If you combine these three factors, then there is a very good chance that you will succeed. But if you won't catch your luck, you can do anything you can, but there will be no result. So I think I would say that we are really lucky that we occasionally met each other. I didn't know my partners before I had a thought to found a company. So we got acquainted with over some mutual acquaintances. And that's it. We just spoke together. And again, luckily, we matched by characters, by, I don't know, goals, by ambitions, yeah. by those yeah. traits that help us to get over to success. It is a huge, you know, portion of luck. I think we're blessed.
Well, I think luck, you mentioned opportunity and kind of being aware. And I think we can make our own luck to some degree if we have our eyes open and we're yeah. looking. Because I think people miss a lot of things because they're not open, right?
Absolutely.
You got lucky because you were looking, right?
Absolutely.
And then you did find people who were a good fit and they believed what you believed.
Yes.
And so the three of you were able to begin.
Yes, yes, exactly. You need to look for luck, then you have to find it, and then you have to work hard. That's the
That's
recipe.
That's right. Yeah, very good. All right, so you started the company, and what did you offer in the beginning, and who did the selling?
I did all selling myself, and actually I'm doing quite the bigger part of it still, because sales is trust. And the first thing that we wanted to communicate is that we are different. We not only can do some technical stuff, there are plenty of places where sure. you can get technical services, but relying on this huge business expertise acquired during those 15 years of my previous career, I would say, we could really understand the actual business needs of a company. And we could connect this business world with the technical world. There are plenty of great consultants on the business side. There are how to make these two worlds intersect and yeah. start speaking with each other with mutual understanding. This is quite a rare find, I would say. And I just approached like thousands of contacts around the world. I tried to find them everywhere over LinkedIn, over, I don't know, AppExchange, wherever I could. And I just suggested this positioning that we can become your trusted advisor. And we are not trying actually to sell to you something. Let's just speak and see what are the challenges. Mm-hmm. And maybe we would be able to help or maybe not. Let's just get to know each other. That's it.
Right.
Yeah, so this was the main idea. And, you know, it was, of course, not that fruitful from the start. I sent myself manually thousands of personalized letters. It was never some kind of outbound cold email campaign with the same message to everybody. I really start to get personal. And first customer, first prospect responded. And we started to speak. To talk, and they said, yes, we feel the difference. It seems that you are thinking about our goals and our benefits that we can get out of it. You're not trying to, you know, just convince us that we should buy everything, et cetera, et cetera. So, and when we started to work together, then the next one was probably recommended. Another one, again, I caught this person at the right moment of time, etc. Yeah. And this is why, by the way, a very great component of success, a very important one. You have to hit a person with your message at the right moment of time.
That's
because right. this is B2B, this is business to business world, and people already somehow solve their challenges. They already work with somebody, they already speak with somebody, and they trust someone. And if you just try and reach out to them on Monday, and everything is right, is going well on their side, they will even not respond to you. But by Friday, they can already be a bit frustrated, a bit disappointed. They can have a new idea that they would like to challenge. They would like to look at the alternative. And if you send the same message on Friday, you have a chance that it will get a response. And then this is your lucky day, and you need to really work yourself out not to lose it, because right. this opportunity may never happen. And with that approach, we co-founders and me personally, we work, I would say, 12 or 14 hours per day just to stay in touch with everybody, to respond exactly at the moment of time when it's needed, and to provide as much support and as much as friendly advice as possible to make sales, actually, which is in our case not exactly what is typically called sales. It's more like advisory help. And the result, the outcome of such an approach, of such a positioning, is that we are building reputation. And you asked, what are the channels that bring customers to us, right?
Mm-hmm. And I'm going to pause you right there before we start to talk about channels, because you mentioned a couple of really important things. And I want our audience, you know, to take note of those. When we first start our companies, we usually do sell ourselves as CEOs, right? It's founder-led sales, and that's extremely important. But soon after that, a lot of times we want to get out of sales, right? And we want salespeople to do that work, and we want to hire others to do that work.
Right.
But you said some things that are really important. One, that sales is about helping and solving and advising, right? Then the sales come after that. We don't sell first and then help and advise. But too many companies are trying to do that. They just go right in for the sale, and then they'll start helping and advising. Well, it's just simply not working today. It might have worked years ago, but it doesn't work anymore. And so I think it's really important that you're doing that. And I just want to pause also and say that you seem to know a lot about sales for someone who has no sales experience in their background. How is that that you know so much about sales?
Well, first of all, I know a lot about management, because even prior to founding an IT company and getting into sales myself, I learned a lot how to manage sales. So, you know, there are great books where very smart authors explain that actually when you are making a sale, or when you are speaking or interacting with a customer, think that this customer should become the customer of your life.
Yes.
And try to approach them as friends first, and try to think what actions or what advice or help would you provide to a friend, and what is the borderline starting from which you are going to take payment for what you are doing.
Right.
And then each company can define themselves what is the level of flexibility that they can offer to the market. And with that, and basing on the competition that's out there, you can understand how different you can be. And that is why typically you approach someone and you just try to get to know this person, and then you start to build your reputation, and then it starts to work for you instead of you. But at the same time, because we are actually involved in consulting business, and it's the business for people, made by people, it's not completely about technology. That is why a lot is happening because of relationships. And that is why probably, and I'm not sure about that, I'm thinking about that quite often, regularly, will I ever be someone able to step off the actual sales? And probably no, because first of all, you have to establish trust. And who can be more trustful or trustworthy than the CEO of the company that's actually closing the deal, I would say. So if you are speaking about this evolution, like how did I come from these initial attempts to try and find some customers to the level of understanding of the sales process where I am today, I would say that happened due to different mistakes that were made, numerous attempts that were made, and I would say also sleepless nights of staying in touch whenever it was needed with customers across the globe.
Yeah.
And right now, the sales process, to my understanding, is quite well structured when it is possible to establish the initial connection. And many people in the company can do that. But in the end, when the business stakeholder is actually deciding who is trustworthy enough to get this money that they are ready to spend, this is where you need to provide and demonstrate the ultimate, the maximal authority, that this decision will be actually protected and that the company will bear the responsibility for that.
Yeah, absolutely. And You know, I always say that the CEO will always have a role in sales, but that role will change as the company matures.
Absolutely.
So I love your approach of staying involved in sales. And you may, you know, have people around you, a sales team, customer success people, subject matter experts, sales engineers, who are all going to be part of the team to help the customer trust you and feel supported and feel that you're going to give them the best solution and all of that. But in the end, the CEO can open the doors with their relationships and their network. And so can anyone in the company, of course. But then the CEO can also help close the doors. Not that they should do the salesperson's job for them, but that there are many ways that the CEO could make it so much easier to buy, right? And really, the sales process today is the buyer's journey. It's how does the buyer want to work with you? Where does your company intersect with the buyer in their journey? Like you said, at that moment in time when they're ready to buy, but maybe it's not today. So we want to keep bumping into them on their journey so that when they are ready, they're going to buy from us, right?
Yeah, exactly. You have to build this trust, and it's a hard work, actually. Yeah. You can spend a lot of time. I remember the customers who were met or were approached by Twisteller, I would say, I don't know, 2 years ago, and we started to work together just recently, just maybe a week or two ago. So it's a long journey, actually. And on all these steps of this long journey, you need not to make a mistake, because you can build your reputation for years, and one wrong action, one deed that was not clearly thought out, can spoil it in just one day. So it's a great asset. And so that's why I'm saying that for our sales, the key assets are our reputation and our people. This is what actually brings the company forward.
100%. And now you have built this beautiful network of customers who know you and trust you and would gladly introduce you to others and speak highly of you, which makes it easier for everyone at your company that sells.
Absolutely.
So let's go back to the channel. So you started doing the selling. You mentioned that you did a great job, and so you got some referrals. In other cases, you reached out. It just happened to be the right time, a little bit of luck, right? Get them at the right time.
Yeah.
Then when you really wanted to start growing even more, what kinds of things did you do, and how did you use the channel?
Well, first of all, we just started to do that in a better way. Like, we already knew what are the typical challenges, what are the typical expectations of customers who started to work with us, and why did they do that. That is why we started to tailor our messages, our pitches a bit better to the specific industries or specific people that we met. Mm-hmm. Second thing, we understood that it's very, very important, as you are saying, to really properly utilize this network that we are working with, because we live in a modern world. And it's quite dynamic, and people tend to change their jobs more or less regularly, right? And many companies don't actually realize that when they start working with somebody, especially if we're not talking about a huge, large enterprise business, people get to know you, even if they don't work directly with you. And it's better if you start tracing where they are now, and try to get connected and establish some relations with not just salespeople or with not just management of the company that's working with you, but all other people who make the overall flow happen, right? There are a lot of great people in the customer organization that actually either benefit from your work because they're using the solution that you have just configured, or just know that you are, you know, a man of your word, that you are fulfilling promises, and it's not something that you can be completely confident of speaking with a new company, right? Because there are different people on the market, and you have to be careful how to trust your money to somebody you don't know enough. It's an important thing. So people get to know you, and then people change their job, and they want probably either to continue working with you because they had a positive experience, or they have a chance to recommend you to somebody who is asking. It takes, you know, emotions, and it takes energy, but that pays off. I'm really tracking the cases when we didn't have any hope that a particular engagement would grow to something big, but we always treated this customer as if this customer were a really important major customer for us. And then it turned out to grow from, let's say, 1,000 per month to 100,000 per month, just because they met this opportunity that they were confident they can pursue it because they have such a reliable partner as Twisteller. So coincidences happen, and it's always a matter of reputation, efforts, hard work, and luck.
Right. Well, and I do think you, like you said, it is work to take care of your network. It is work to stay in touch with these people and to nurture those relationships, because they're not all ready to buy at this moment. Maybe they can never buy, but maybe they can introduce you. So we have to build these networks and nurture them. And what we see out there in the marketplace with every different type of company, I mostly work with tech and software, and companies like yours who provide services around tech and software. They're sending 25-year-olds out with a list. The person lives in LA and they're calling companies in South Dakota who don't know them, have never heard of their company. They have no credibility. They have no referral network, nothing. And they're expecting those sales reps to have success. And it just boggles my mind. So I think, you know, what you're saying is so important. Everyone in the audience really needs to take heed of this. The most important thing that you can do at your company is have the individuals who work there build a broad network and maintain it so that it can be utilized to get new business in many different ways, you know, through introductions or directly. But I think that companies are just really missing out on this. Like you mentioned, they're just not taking the time. They want the quick hits. So they just call lists of people and send more emails and they get a small response. And maybe it's a little quicker, but building this structure that is a trusted structure, right? People who know you and trust you and believe in what you do and can introduce you and, you know, bring you into their new company when they move. This is so important and it makes selling so much easier. But you have to be willing to put the effort in, like you said, the emotion to nurture these relationships. And luckily, LinkedIn makes it really easy for us to find people and get to know them. And when they change jobs, the first place that notices that is LinkedIn. So you can follow them and congratulate them and again, nurture that relationship.
Yeah, absolutely. And you have to remember that you really need to take responsibility of what you are selling, because sales process should not be considered as the process that ends when the deal is closed.
Right.
Actually, it ends when the work is done and the customer is happy.
Right.
And if you are not ready to actually track all the steps of this long journey of the customer, especially if we are talking about some long-term project, if your salespeople do not take care of what the customer actually will think right about these sales in some time afterwards, or maybe in half a year, in a year after they actually completed the project with you, if they don't care, they will not be able to really build this trust and really understand the value that they are bringing and maybe adjust some messages that they are communicating and delivering as well. That's very important. If the company has sold something, it has to bear the responsibility that the customer is happy. Sometimes the company can sell something wrong. I would say some solution, some product, some service that's not completely applicable or useful to the customer. And it takes, authority and moral dignity to actually admit that.
Right. And at that time, courage, you have to say, we made a mistake, right?
Yes, Let's fix it. And try to fix it and take the expenses of fixing it on yourself as a company. That's crucially important, because when somebody trusts you, it's important that they know that if something goes wrong, you will not leave them. You will bear the responsibility, and then they will trust you again and again, and they will recommend you to anybody. And we had such mistakes. Yeah, when we sold the project that we thought would take 100 hours to implement, and it turned out to be 500 hours for some reason, we took all the extra hours on us. Yeah. And it's by default, because this is the responsibility and this is what the complete sales process looks like until the customer is completely happy.
That's right. So today, instead of just counting how many customers we have, we want to count how many successful customers we have because the rest really don't matter. Because, like you said, it breaks the cycle. You're not going to get those referrals, keep those relationships so that when they move, they bring you into the next company if you don't do it well in the first place. And I don't know if you've read Winning by Design. It was written by Jaco van der Kooi. Do you know that one?
Yeah, I've heard about this particular book. Yeah, I
Yeah,
had.
so he talks about the funnel as a bow tie. So the and he so he turns the funnel on its side. So like, here we are entering, getting to know your company and we, the buyers knowing your company and working through their journey to where you close the deal, right? And then the bow tie opens back up on the other side because now I'm your customer and now you're going to help onboard me and make sure that's a smooth process, make sure we get user adoption, sell us other things that we need as we move through so that we become a customer for life. As you mentioned earlier, we don't just want a customer, we want a customer for life. So we have to approach it that way. And using this bow tie method, we really think about what happens after the deal closes. And that's where the real magic comes in,
Oh,
because
yeah.
that's how you do. You've gained their trust now, and you're going to show them that you're going to keep their trust and deliver as promised and make sure that they have an exceptional experience.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's true. And that is why it's a long journey. And that is why a CEO should really be involved in all the stages and understand very well that the sales ends when the customer is actually happy. Then you can start thinking about the new sale to this customer. That's true.
Well, and as you scale, right, the CEO can't be involved in every single thing that happens with every single customer. And this is why I think it's so important to build out customer success as a model, inside of your company, because these are the people who are going to take it from there, from the close of the deal and nurture and really care for those customers. And then bring the sellers or the CEO back in whenever that person is needed. So they're kind of, the caretakers of your customer.
That's true. And it depends very much on the scale of the company. And probably I was not lucky enough to grow to something bigger yet. But for the companies of the scale that I actually managed, I had enough energy to really act as the last mile decision maker for any question of any customer. Meaning that even if when we were acting as a retail company that was selling some different construction materials or some specific things to end users, my mobile direct mobile phone number was published on the home page of the website saying that
Wow.
if you have any questions, you can ring CEO directly and you will get help. And
Wow.
this approach actually is the best declaration of the responsibility and the attitude to the customers that to me can be demonstrated by a company that if you are treated wrong, to your opinion, you can always directly contact the CEO. So
Truly, truly remarkable, Dimitri. I applaud you for how you've grown this company and the efforts and the care that you take. It's very admirable, and I thank you so much for sharing that with all of us. I'm curious what's coming next. So you've grown quite a bit in the what 5 years that you, since you started. What's next?
it's a good question because I think I personally am so focused on my work that I'm not a great planner ahead, I would say. And as of now, I'm looking at my company and I understand that there is still plenty of potential. There are many businesses that could benefit on our services, and still we have a great job to do to tell these businesses about that. They don't know yet. And
Right.
Salesforce market is huge, and we as a company
Yes.
are so small that I think it can easily be a lifetime adventure. And what brings additional energy, what actually hits me is finding and getting acquainted to new people, to new companies, getting new opportunities, learning a lot, getting to make mistakes, even if that brings me forward as a professional. And this is something that really admires me, and I would be lucky enough to call my job a hobby. That is why the next thing, besides growing the consulting business, I would be very much happy. I would be delighted if our product would be appreciated by more companies. We have our Sculptor CPQ application that helps companies to automate their quotes. This is a child that is born recently and already is loved by a few first customers, and it's a great tool. So plenty of ideas, plenty of work to do, and I don't think it will ever end. The world is huge, and yeah, we just need to work hard to be able to catch all the opportunities and all the fish in this pool. So
I love your energy and enthusiasm. You are the kind of CEO that I would want to work for. And I thank you so much for taking the time to come on Sales Talk for CEOs and share your story.
Thank you very much. It was a great pleasure, and thank you for welcoming me. I wish all the audience the most successful sales cycles, and let your customers get back to you with new deals. Thank you for your attention.
Thanks for tuning in to Sales Talk for CEOs. You can find me at alicehyman.com. Be sure and connect with me on LinkedIn and let me know that you heard the show. If you found value in today's episode, please subscribe, write a review, and share the show with another CEO.